Translation. O Sutta Goswami, your words are pleasing to our minds. Please, therefore, explain this to us as it was spoken by the great devotee Shukadeva Goswami, who is very expert in transcendental knowledge and who spoke to Maharaj Parikshit upon being asked. Purport. Now we have very long purport, 700 pages or something. Please bear me. Probably more than 700. It's 18,000 years. Purport. Knowledge explained by the previous Acharya, like Shukadeva Goswami, and followed by the next, like Sutta Goswami, is always powerful transcendental knowledge, and is therefore penetrating and useful to all submissive students. Thus end Bhaktivedanta Purports of the second canto, third chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Pure Devotional Service, The Change of Heart. So it's a challenge. I don't know what you would speak about. As I'm kind of fanatic, don't like to go above the brackets of the verse and purport. We have to do something different here. It's end of the chapter, so it's good to recap the entire chapter together, because, as I said, I think it was Krishna Dharma spoke that neophyte should stay as long as possible in the first and second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, whose mind is still lurking with lusty affairs and so forth. So if our minds rebel against, that means another reason to stay there as long as possible, because we are not supposed to discuss above that until we are a little bit well-to-do in the ocean service. So don't worry, I'll not embarrass you. If somebody asked me to recap all this previous chapter, I wouldn't. Just luckily, yesterday I sat and skimmed through quickly. So whatever you remember, please say. Okay, so what's happened on the end of the first canto? On the end, that of course, we have all these Pandavas discussions and then Ashwatthama's atrocities. And then finally, yeah, Krishna left, and then Arjuna came totally destroyed. And then Pandavas decided to retire timely, and then they established Shukadeva Goswami on the throne. And then later we have encounter with Shukadeva Goswami. Not Shukadeva Goswami, but Parikshit Maharaj, sorry. Parikshit Maharaj with the Kali. So it was quite a few verses there. Finally, he got cursed by Sringi, innocent boy who was very sentimental. He was thinking, Maharaj killed my father. By Sringi Rishi didn't even notice, so he cursed him to die. And then Maharaj Parikshit didn't try to redeem that, refute the curse, but accepted. And then went to the bank of the Ganges, or Yamuna, that's the kind of same. And then all sages from entire universe gathered there, in that place, and he asked them the question. What did he ask them? Yeah, what's the duty of one on the end of the life? So sages were a little bit, they didn't reply straight away, but they said, oh, you know, you're such a great devotee. Yeah, and then what he decided to do in that place, when he came to that place before, with determination, fast to death. And then all these sages appreciated his determination. They said, oh, such a great thing. We're going to sit with you and just wait to see you die. It's not that they were morbid or something, but he was known as such a great devotee. So when he passes away, he's going to be elevated to higher position, Vaikuntha or higher even. So, because it was so rare, they wanted to witness that thing. to see these great things happen, because it was so rare to go back home, back to Gautama, especially in Vedic times, all the way prior, although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even now is very rare. So they wanted to witness this. So in moment when he asked them what he's on supposed to do, the last moment of life, then on the scene, great thing happened. Great saint Shukadeva Goswami appeared. It was like probably amazing scene to see, like if you can envision this. Thousands of sages there, and then suddenly very effulgent saint comes, accompanied by all these ordinary people, common people who took him as a madman or weirdo, like if you, your neighbor, if you have in your neighbor somebody who is kind of weirdish and crazy, and especially in the villages, kind of obvious, everybody makes fun of him and, you know, nobody takes him seriously. And suddenly, when he arrived to that assembly, all sages bowed down. This was a big shock for all this entourage of common people. He's such a great, we cannot recognize who is he. And he sat down, and then Maharaj Parikshit asked him the same. First he surrendered to sages, got some blessings, and then Shukadeva Goswami appeared. And then he asked him, and then Shukadeva Goswami congratulated. This is such a great question. This is not something which common people would ask. What is one supposed to do in time of death? But what ordinary people will ask anyway? What ordinary people will ask before they die? I mean, if he's on pious or whatever, then, you know, they said, I did my best, so it's up to Jesus, whatever. Or if he's, I don't know, if he's atheist, then he may say, I don't care, you know, there's nothing after. So it may be kind of so-called peaceful death. You don't know what's happening in the exact moment of death. But if he's great transcendentalist, you know, then he'll ask something else. So Maharaj Parikshit asked, because ordinary people never ask anything for ultimate benefit of humanity or for others. He said, those devoid of Atma Tattva do not inquire about what is beyond this life. Now, one may have some idea, even if he's transcendentalist, what to ask in the last moments of death. They say that one can attain self-realization through knowledge of matter and spirit, kind of neti-neti, you know. Then, by practice of mystic power, which is described later on in Srimad Bhagavatam, or by perfect discharge of one's occupational duty. These are all very, very slow processes, but it's recommended in the Vedas. So. But Shukadeva Goswami said his best thing to do at the end of life is, Ante Narayana Smriti. That's a thing. Without anything you do, any yoga, any this knowledge of spirit, matter, mystic power, no, if there is no this inquiry of this ultimate, you're gonna hit the target below something else, or you don't even know. So believe it like karma to guide you or something. Because he said, but to remember Narayana in time of death is only for very elevated transcendentalists, as Shukadeva Goswami says. See, only topmost transcendentalists find pleasure describing the Lord's glories. And then Shukadeva Goswami said, I, although I was perfectly situated in transcendence, still, and I learned Srimad Bhagavatam from my father, he says, you know, who described the Lord's glories, and even I, who situated transcendentally, I was attracted to Lord's pastimes. And now I'll explain the same points I heard from my father to all of you. So this beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, from the more or less second canto, Srimad Bhagavatam really starts. Everything is in the introduction, setting up scene, how it happened. So I'll describe to you all this. O King, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord after the ways of the great authorities is doubtless and fearless way of success for all, including those who are free from material desires, those who are desirous of all material enjoyment, and those who are self-realized by dint of transcendental knowledge. So this includes all the sages here, these three. See? They are free from material desires. More or less all these assembled sages were free from material desires. Material enjoyment, no question that they desired. Maybe some subtle thing. But they were also self-satisfied due to dint of transcendental knowledge. These are sages. But chanting of the holy name after the way of great authorities is doubtless fearless way of success for all. So even for you, sages, that's the greatest successful way. Then he cites of King, I think Maharaj Parikshit brings example of King Katvanga, who had just a moment to leave and who surrendered to the Lord. And he was asking demigods, he was fighting for them, how much I have? And they told him. And then, so he's citing that this is most important, his last moment, surrender to the Lord. And then what he describes in the later on, what first he describes, do you remember? We passed a few months of this. What Maharaj Parikshit first recommends? Remember? Anyone remembers? He recommends. Just before that, touches the point first of Ashtanga Yoga. First it touches, you know, how one should go and exclude a place and then absorb fully in the Lord, and it describes to pranayama, through, you know, like introduction to Ashtanga Yoga. But then King kind of asks, mind is still restless for that kind of yoga. You know, how one can curb restless mind to be able even to perform Ashtanga Yoga. And then, what is described then? Okay, let's step down. Describes Viratrup. Describes first. Yeah. Because it describes this vast, vast creation, everything in it, basically, and our position within that Viratrupa, universal form. See? And how we are related to that Viratrupa. There's all these quite few verses described in the beginning, I think in the second chapter. There's a great, like, greatness and power and might, even fear, awe and reverence. This is included there, just direct to the, you know, that everything is the Lord. So one must concentrate the mind on Him, the only all-blissful absolute truth. Otherwise, one will be misled and will cause his own degradation. Here, Shukadeva Goswami uses the word Him, doesn't use the word it when describing universal form. Again, to point again to all the sages, it's not it, it's Him. So, and he said, in the beginning of second chapter, he said, you are all Brahma. After partial dissolution, even him, by meditating on this Viratrupa, he regained his consciousness. Even all Brahma, to be able to continue creation again. And then he goes to say that the Vedic sounds very bewildering. You see, that's an interesting thing. Vedic songs are very bewildering. And so enlightened ones should try for minimum materially. That's the next few verses describe that. Because it's not that everybody will meditate on Viratrupa. Even that for common people. Okay, you know. And even if they study the Vedas, common people, what they will find? You know, Vedas sanction something else. I mean, like, you see, it's interesting how Vyasadeva wrote the Vedas. It's no wonder they got so entangled in it. You know, he wrote first few verses, from the which he received Chaturshloki. But then as he was elaborating more and more, he wanted to scoop out every jiva through the Vedas and elevate them up. So when you do this, everything gets a bit complex. See, these are transcendentalists here. There is some for them, but he was going down, trying to elaborate. Therefore, he described all this Karmakandya section of the Vedas. Wow, therefore he got so entangled. Everything went so complicated. I mean, do you ever underwent any project? You start simple, but then it gets complex and more complex and complex. You have this experience. I do all the time. I kind of attach to detail thing. And then things that complex at some project I have to give it up. Like, because you include this, you think in your mind, okay, this with this, this connection with this, and you go on. So this is Vyasadeva. What happened to him? He was writing, okay, now this writing and writing and writing and writing, tried to scoop down every possible jiva, include everything. And then in the end was just frustrated. I knew he wrote so much, but God, exhaustion. And then, of course, Narada Muni appeared and pointed out, that's what's the reason. So here, coming back, you cannot meditate on Viratrupa, you cannot perform Ashtanga, you cannot give up everything. Okay, we say here, you know, keep at minimum, at least, keep your life at minimum, you know, follow the Vedas, but keep minimum, get entangled. All the sages, they were very simple, austere, it's not for them, but all the sages were gurus of so many people, gurus of humanity, they were from all universe. This was instruction for them, to instruct their own disciples and followers. So keep at minimum your life and worship the Lord in the heart. Minimum. And then he describes the feature of Paramatma in the heart, Shukadeva Goswami. His feature, beautiful, sitting on the lotus of the heart, dressed in yellow, with Kaustubha jewels and other jewels, and you know, how to meditate on Paramatma describes. And I said, unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and material world, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of the prescribed duties. So this kind of very systematic preaching to all the sages. See, first, familiars, audience to final goal. The first few verses, immediate point, Antanarayana Smriti, chanting of the glories of the Lord. This is the best method, top. But then go into details. And entire Srimad Bhagavatam is about all details, about combination of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, and to be free yogi must do this. You can do so many things. Ante Narayana Smriti, and chanting glories of the Lord, that's the final result for you. Then Shukadeva Goswami aims at instructing actually yogis. And then he describes the process of Ashtanga Yoga actually more elaborately, you know. And then, yeah, this is actually beautiful description for me as kind of special lady. Very attracted to kind of cosmological aspects, how in second chapter described how yogi, after succeeding in Ashtanga Yoga, breaks through the skull and then gives up and first goes to Vaishvanara, which is, you know what this Vaishvanara is? is abode of fire, gold, Agni. So this kind of gate door for cleansing first through Vaishvanara, which gives a gross contamination first. And then he's elevated to Shishumara. What is Shishumara? Is it Dhruva Loka? I mean, more or less, in this connection, sorry. This imaginary form of Delphine, which is also one of the feature of universal form, because in actuality, this Delphine doesn't exist. But Shishumara here relates to Dhruva Loka, Because in its imaginary form, when yogis meditate, yogi meditates on entire universe. And indeed, our entire Milky Way, solar system, all planets resemble actually to kind of coiled form of delphin. If you could go far enough and look our Milky Way and all the stars and all these stars and planets, it resembles kind of like a Shishumara or delphin. So includes all planets. So yogis meditate on that form, which is not that any delphin hangs there on the ceiling or something. But there's Shishumara means delphin anyway in Sanskrit. But here Shishumara particularly describes Dhruvaloka and then said he has darshan, this yogi. Because Shishumara, he has a darshan of the Lord, because there is an aspect, there is a Milky Way on the Dhruvaloka where Mahavishnu resides. And then he proceeds further to all these lokas up to Satya Loka or Brahma Loka. And then on each of those lokas, Satya Loka, Tapa Loka, Jnana Loka, Satya Loka, get cleansing more and more and more. After he surpasses even Satya Loka, where Brahma lives, and goes through the coverings of universe, where he gets cleansed from all subtle contamination, mind, intelligence, false ego. And finally, when he passes to false ego, then self-realization. This is such a long, tedious process. And definitely, in previous ages, up to the Kali Yuga, this was a process. Ashtanga Yoga was process for self-realization, for spiritual elevation, for all the way up to Lord Chaitanya, more or less. I think the description that is that the father of Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave the body through the, they could see, you know, that's elevating his lapir and then his skull burst and he quit his body as yogis do. So this was process, previous ages. You are so lucky. You don't need to undergo all this. In a way, similar process of purification, but to chant the holy name, that's much, much easier. See. And then, Shukadeva Goswami said, all this process is described to Lord Brahma by Krishna. All this process of Ashtanga, all these discourses, is explained to Brahma by Krishna. And I, he said, and then Lord Brahma, after studying the Vedas three times, what he established, O King, it is therefore essential that every human being hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, always and everywhere. This was conclusion of Lord Brahma, at the end of three times studying entire Vedas. Because all the sages, they accept in Brahma as the greatest authority of Vedas. He's more or less like their guru. And if Brahma says that, to remember Supreme and glorify Supreme, that's the topmost. Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda. So that's what Brahma says. If Brahma says, then he's more inclined that the sages will also accept. And now he aims in chapter 3 at common people. What we described in the beginning of chapter 3, something quite different, because now Vyasadeva addresses common people who cannot even think of Lord, who cannot meditate on all these personal aspects, Ashtanga Yoga, addresses them, because they are attached to enjoyment. What these few verses describe first, remember that worshipping all kinds of demigods. You remember that? So many things, like includes a few verses. Worship this, worship that, worship this. But he points on end of each verse, there is kind of uselessness of all this worship of all these demigods to gain your aspirations, whatever, you know. Because common people never listen this or discuss topics of Krishna. See. He said, having ears like a snake holes, or having tongue like a frog, or having them ornaments like ornamented dead body. They are not interested in all this. They're interested in sense gratification. Okay, now Vyasadeva dissects more down. Okay, you want to enjoy, that's how you enjoy. Worship demigods, because within each worship of a demigod, there's a worship of Vishnu. So, okay, I found them. So if they follow that, at least some purification will be seen. And then in last few verses, Steady Bhava is described, Lalita Sakhi, she was reading that purport, Steady Bhava. Because, you know, after instructing all this, in this chapter actually, chapter is called Pure Devotional Service, but describes first worship of demigods, points out at Vishnu, and then talks about chanting of the holy name. And then Steady Bhava is described, what is actually chanting produces, and what service produces. Steady Bhava is described, like, try to name any of those, like, what is symptom of Steady Bhava? Like, one is attached to constantly describe the fame, glories, pastimes of the Lord. Anyone else remember any other points? Like, Namaganesa Daruchi, this is, and then something, yes, Visati Stale or something. But then, yeah. English for our, yeah, detachment, virakti, manashuna, pride, yeah, pridelessness, whatever, attachment to living in the holy dham, yeah. Yeah, so this like describes how this steady bhava develops, so gives entire so same as this question of Maharaj Parikshit are seen by sages are most beneficial to entire humanity. The sages also appreciate the question there. See, like, there's many speakers in the Bhagavatam, in this, especially few chapters. There's Shaunakarishi, and then Sutta Goswami, and then Maharaj Parikshit, and then, of course, King, and so many. So everybody appears the same. So because all these sages gathered to benefit humanity, they wanted to benefit humanity, therefore they gathered there. And then Shukadeva Goswami says, this is greatest benefit of humanity. To serve and remember Supreme Personality of Godhead, chant His glories. To save humanity from hellish conditions or to phantasmagoria of heavenly regions. I was just reading the other day, I mentioned to some devotees, there's one devotee compiled all kinds of quotes from hellish regions. Some from Srimad Bhagavatam, but there's much more from different Puranas, especially Vayu Purana. It's horrible, my goodness, like, when you read this, it's compassion simply goosing, you know. Even my dry heart is softened, you know. So much suffering for people, you know. And my goodness, so many, like very vivid descriptions what's happened in those cells, you know. And somehow, his mission is to some to help those poor conditioned souls, see. And that's a benefit to Harinam Sankirtan in this age. Pull them out somehow. We've been discussing last few verses, every devotee mentioned how, you know, beneficial is if they touch the book, they hear the holy name, they see the Vaishnavas, then you have to take another birth. You know, say if one touches the book, he doesn't want. Next life, you have to take birth because next he progresses when he's left off. So you have to read the book. To read the book, he has to get human body. Is it Vrindavan Chandra? No, Vrindavan Chandra. Somebody said that. You know. Yeah, Kartik Chandra. So, you know, it's incredible. Like, I mean, when you read this, I could identify myself also. Oh, boy, you know. Like, there's a hell for everything there. You know. Nobody wants to go there, but this is described as a four gates leading to Yamapuri. There are four gates from four sides. Each of those gates and pathways are different. Pious people have nice flowery garden around their pathway to Yamaloka. You know, mostly go to Pitriloka, but there are others also for common people, and there's scary ones for those like red hot iron pathway and fires and where to go. I can share with you all this. It's a big article, quite a few pages, terrible. So Harinam Sankirtan can save them. My goodness, you know. And now in this verse, finally, again, sages turned again to Sutta Goswami, because now Sutta Goswami, on this verse, this is what Sutta Goswami speaks. So the main point this verse is parampara system. So whatever they bring in parampara, the same way, sages also accept. So it's kind of mutually agree, all in parampara, they mutually agree. That's the potency of parampara. This is how knowledge comes. They mutually agree. And then you are tuned, mutually agree. What previous sages said, that's a parampara. So it's not kind of sentiment. Somebody feels, maybe this, maybe that, or somebody active way, oh, chanting is so ecstatic, and yeah, it's great, and but the heart is dry. It's not really, it's experiential. And because all sages, you know, all parampara say the same, it's not sentiment. So that's what potency. Because there are three levels of learning, pratyaksha, anumana, shabda, see. And then all these sages agree to one, shabda, shrutis, see. They all mutually agree based on that shabda, not sense perception, pratyaksha or anumana, what they heard, see. And we all came to Krishna consciousness due to these three, pratyaksha, anumana, shabda, isn't it? Like, by sense of perception, we could see this world stinks. Something is wrong, terribly here, so. Something is wrong. You know, what's the purpose of life? You know, it must be something higher. It's kind of, you perceive this, something is wrong. And then anumana. If you try to hypothesize, purpose of life is this, purpose of life is thus. This is meaning, you know, that's the goal of life. And then we read, find millions of books, try to figure it out. What's the purpose of life? See? But, through that process, anumana on cannot establish the final goal. See, cannot. Can you say for with certainty, with anumana process, you can ascertain what final goal? It's confusion. Even those who are spiritual, whatever, new ages, something is there, you're not sure where you're at, what's final goal. So you cannot. So finally, we have to rely shabda. Shabda must prevail. See. And also, if one doesn't stick to shabda, then again, he will pull out by those two again, back. Because there's no strong platform. So shabda must prevail, you see. If not, then one may leave process. If shabda doesn't prevail, you see. And then he will rely on one sense perception, or again, continue to search, which is Anumana, try to look. And some devotees even, they went to that step again, not sure about Krishna consciousness. And then again search, maybe this practice, maybe that practice. We have experience of devotees who went to that step again, see. Because all these two are in category four human imperfections. Pratyaksha, anumana, the propensity to cheat, imperfect senses, propensity to be in illusion, and make mistakes. This is for these two. Shabda, perfect. So to accept shabda best situation, you know, like pratyaksha is like a kind of shuddha type of mentality, neophyte. You know, like, or Kanishta. There's no chance for progress there. You're just knocked here and there, you know, experience so many things. But it should open you to next two. And Anuman is more jnani. This is that, this is net, this is not like neti neti. See? But you cannot achieve until, you see, through Anumana, should come to the point that on his own he cannot achieve final self-realization. And the Shabda is like a Brahmana. And why one loses the faith? That's another question. Why somebody loses the faith? Why one does it, loses the faith in the Shabda? I mean, I was thinking a little bit only, because doesn't experience what is stated in Shrutis. I don't know any other thing. Faith in Shabda slackens, because he doesn't experience what he says there. See? But I don't know, is it any other? Of course, offenses are there. Why one loses the faith? Doesn't hear from right sources. Yeah? But once he's already in process, why he loses the faith? Again, he doesn't see that that works. Yeah? Maybe get a mic, they can elaborate. Yeah.
Haribo, so according to your question, how can one lose the faith is that...
Yeah.
Because if you don't apply that knowledge,
yeah,
then it gives you a lot of... It will not give you realized knowledge. You will not realize it. You will just pure theoretical knowledge also invites opportunity for speculation.
Yeah.
And then when you start speculating, then you know everything is lost.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point, yeah. Of course, then this brings again offenses because you become judgmental, you become critical. I don't see anyone pure devotee, you know. I don't see these symptoms in anyone which is described by Parampara. You know, there's one devotee, remember, said, this, chanting Hare Krishna, cannot even cure the mouse from his fear. What to speak about that? Like, you know, like totally disbelief. So it's a kind of offenses. This whole, you know, mixture of offenses, of course, you know. And how long... And how at all we can maintain this blind faith? I mean, in the beginning, it's kind of blind faith. Srila Prabhupada says, of course, sublime faith in something, blind faith in something sublime is good. But how long you can maintain that? Like, if you fast practice, seemingly nothing happens. How long? See? That's the thing. So, experiential, Antaranga says, must be experiential, some degree to keep you. Therefore, said this, complicated for the complicated. Srinivas always say that. If you're simple, then it's actually so sublime truth. If you're simple, yeah, it's easy. Like, you don't concern much like a kid. Yeah, we believe. Must be experiential also, but mixture of everything. Anyway, I say something, whatever it is. We've forgotten after breakfast. That's my luck. And it's lately very austere to sit here, for me especially, and my ego gets ground down each time a little bit. It's kind of, you know, everything in me rebels, maybe except my false ego. But whatever it is, this body is temporary, whatever I said or did not say, it will be forgotten. Krishna is supreme. It doesn't matter what somebody said, what somebody didn't say, it will be forgotten. Hare Krishna, if you have something to add, you're welcome. Hare Bol. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, Amala Purana Ki Jai.